is The Fantasy Show with Shoali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It's time for The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Shoali, Matt Marchese here with you after a wild Saturday on Super Wild Card Weekend in the National Football League. We're here to help you take a look back at what happened on Saturday. Later on in the show, we'll take a look at the three games scheduled for later this afternoon, Monday's game as well between the Cowboys and Buccaneers. Take a look at some of your favorite start-sit plays as always. We didn't get into all of our top 12s from this past year. We did QBs last week, so we'll get to the running backs, wide receivers at the bottom of the hour. We'll do tight ends next hour. We actually have a guest for the first time basically all year, which is pretty remarkable. BJ Rudell, writer and analyst for Pro Football Network, will help take a look with us at maybe how the season ended and what to expect from year 2023 in fantasy football, which kicks off, I want to say in September, Matt, but I guess really in July, as we all love our mock drafts. We'll take a look at all the fantasy news and notes of the season with BJ. That's at the top of the hour, and maybe make some Super Bowl predictions as well. How are you doing? How did you enjoy the Seahawks and Jags wins yesterday?
So I went into yesterday, and I'll apologize for my voice. I went into yesterday thinking, okay, The Niners are going to beat the Seahawks, and I think that the Jags-Chargers game is going to be close. And I was shocked at how well Seattle had played early on in the game, and then it just turns into a blowout. And the last thing that I expected, and I think a lot of people expected, was for the legend of Brock Purdy to continue. Not to continue because I thought they were going to win yesterday, but to continue in a fashion where he throws for 332 yards and absolutely torches the Seattle Seahawks. And with all of that, the guy that I was expecting to have the biggest day of everybody, because Seattle, as we know, has been horrible against opposing tight ends, was George Kittle, who was held to two catches for 37 yards. Exactly how we planned it. And we'll get into it, but I feel like the Seahawks, they really got away from what was working, and that was running Kenneth Walker in the first half.
Yeah, I had one carry really trying in the to second control half. The, man.
Yeah, and really try to control, you know, the clock. It's so bizarre to me, because in Pete Carroll's offense, a lot of the time it is predicated on we need to really run the ball well. And it's not as if by the time the second half started, like, that the game was out of hand by any stretch of the imagination. It was very close. So to get away from your game plan was such a weird flex by Pete Carroll, and it was super disappointing. And then in the second game, 27 zip. I mean, my cousin texted me and said, this was supposed to be the best game of the day. Woof. And then everything changed. Everything turned on a dime, and what a just bizarre turn of events. And if there was ever a game that you can describe the Chargers charging, that was it, and it's not even close.
Okay, so we could go a number of different ways to start. Why, like, you know what? Why don't we start with Jags Chargers, just because that was the more surprising result of the evening. I freely admit, in my Super Bowl bracket, I do this bracket with my pals every year, and we all just kind of, there's like a little website you can put in where depending on who wins, it automatically changes the seeding and so on. It's kind of nice. It's a little nice, neat little tool. So we all kind of take screenshots and share our, I don't know what you want to call it, like bracket or ballot for the NFL playoffs. And then whoever gets the most points, just winner takes the whole pool after the Super Bowl. But my first two picks are already, I picked the 49ers to win over the Seahawks, but I did admittedly pick the Chargers, and I was feeling pretty good about the 27-0 lead. And then, you know what, they got the touchdown right before the end of the half to your guy, Evan Engram. And I want to get something on Evan Engram in a sec here, but I've seen some people making the case that is what we saw last night, because they win 31-30, the Jags over the Chargers, after being down 27-0 in the first half. It's the third largest comeback in NFL postseason history. I've actually seen some people compare it to the Super Bowl, Patriots Super Bowl comeback win over the Falcons, a 28-3, infamous 28-3. And I'll just say, I don't think there's probably any, unless another comeback happens like we saw last night in the Super Bowl, I don't think I'll ever be able to get behind a full-on saying that a comeback of that magnitude, even as crazy as it was last night, is worse than what happened to the Falcons. And I know Falcons fans probably like, oh, stop picking on me. Why are we talking about this years later? But it's crazy to see people bring it up over and over again, maybe because there just haven't been that many comebacks, but it's pretty wild. But I only say no, I disagree, only because it's the Super Bowl and that's probably the biggest stage you can get.
Yeah, no, you can't compare the two. Like that game yesterday to me was more like Buffalo Bills, Houston Oilers.
Comeback. Sure, yeah.
Even though the margin was bigger, but that's like you can't compare having a Super Bowl basically in your hand and losing it to a wild card weekend win. Like you just can't. I think what makes this comeback so, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't even think of the word. Anyway, original or whatever, something like that. My brain is not functioning this morning. Unique, that's the one. Yeah, there you go, Matt. Way to go. Give yourself a hand. What makes this one so unique is just how awful Trevor Lawrence was to start the game. Like, at least in some of those other comebacks, like, you know, teams were able to move the ball and maybe, you know, maybe they don't, you know, convert on a fourth down. But Trevor Lawrence at one point had 4 interceptions and 4 completions on, I think it was 12 attempts or 16 attempts or whatever it was. And then he finishes the game as a totally different quarterback with 4 touchdown passes. And the poise that he had in the second half, and especially at the end of the game to drive the ball. Like, the Chargers defense, who looked so good in the first half, did not have an answer for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And credit to Doug Peterson, that call on 4th and 1, that run with Travis Etienne, yeah, which basically sealed the game, was an absolutely brilliant call. And Doug Peterson, as we know, has the stones to do stuff like that. Because we saw it with the Philly special in the Super Bowl, which ended up in a win for the Eagles. And, you know, it just goes to show you what happens in the NFL when you have an adult in the room and not Urban Meyer coaching your team. Because, like, if Doug Peterson is not if he's not coach of the year, then I don't know who is.
You know, because I honestly do think that the Doug Peterson's job with the Jaguars, it might legitimately be, to me, more impressive than winning a Super Bowl with the Eagles, given how god-awful the Jacksonville Jaguars have been. Like, the Eagles, don't get me wrong, like, they were a talented team, and it took a great play calling and so on to beat the Patriots in a very high-scoring game in the Super Bowl. That game obviously was sealed by a Brady fumble at the very, 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 very end of the game by the defense, and then the Eagles ran out the clock. But I just, you know what I mean? Like, I almost feel like because the Jags have been such a bereft franchise, like out there in the middle of the ocean without a paddle for years and years and years, I feel like it's just so impressive that, especially even given what we've seen last year, it's so impressive to see the turnaround to me.
For sure. And when you look at the roster, did they make some changes? Sure, they did. They brought in, they drafted Trayvon Walker, who, by the way, took a really dumb penalty yesterday, although it was a super weak call. That almost cost the Jags. But you look at the signing of Christian Kirk, and a lot of people shook their heads at how much money he got, but he scores a big touchdown yesterday. Evan Ingram, who was an afterthought by everybody, has a monster day yesterday and scores a big touchdown. And Travis Etienne, who wasn't on the team last year because he was hurt, ends up having a good day and basically seals the victory. But the thing to me that the real turnaround is, and it's like this with any good franchise, when you draft a quarterback first overall, you expect to get your return. And they weren't getting the return last year with Trevor Lawrence because, again, there wasn't an adult in the room. But to take a team that was so downtrodden and beaten up and to turn them into a team that not only wins the division, but, I mean, I hate to call that game an upset because by betting standards, it was an upset because of how the line shifted. But that's a home game for a division winner. Like they should have an advantage. And, you know, let's even talk about the micro of the game in that Doug Peterson goes into halftime. And I don't know what he said or what Trevor Lawrence said, but it worked. Like that's coaching. And they adjusted their game plan. The Chargers could not do anything offensively in the second half. And the Jags really took advantage of that using, you know, shorter field position, not having to worry about, you know, we're going to start every drive from our 25 because our defense can't stop anybody. I just thought that was a masterclass by Doug Peterson, by that Jags defense and offense in the second half. And certainly one of those games that we will probably never forget because it was absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, it really was. So a couple things. One, on Trevor Lawrence, yeah, four interceptions in the guy in the first half, and the guy comes back and throws four touchdowns in the second half. I believe he threw touchdowns to four different players in that second half, including Christian Kirk and Evan Engram, like you said. It's always funny to hear the players, and I've said this before, but it's always funny to hear players give God the credit for the win afterwards. And hey, full like you can do whatever you want, obviously, but it's always funny to hear it because it implies to me, like whenever they're like, oh man, I thank God for being on our side. Does that by necessity mean that he wasn't on the side of the losing team? Like, you know what I mean? Does that mean the losers were not favored that particular day? That always kind of makes me chuckle a little bit, but hey, I'm glad Trevor Lawrence was able to find some solace in that. Certainly. I believe Riley Patterson did as well, as we saw him take the necklace off at the end of the game. So I'm glad they were very excited. I wrote this piece for sportsnet.ca on X factors, and you know, they always want me to pick, we did this last year too, and they always want me to pick just one guy from each matchup. I had a 1,000-word limit. I was going to write two guys from each matchup, and then I got to one from each matchup, and I looked at the word counter. I'd already blown by 1,000 words, so I basically had to stop right there. I had picked my two X factors for yesterday were Brock Purdy and Evan Engram. I was going to pick Zay Jones, and then I remember our conversation about Evan Engram at the very end of the season. I thought, you know what the hell? I'll finally put some faith in old Evan Engram at the end of the year after basically crapping on the guy for the entire fantasy season. And I was a little afraid because the game was 27-0, and I thought to myself, man, the one time I put any kind of faith in the Jags offense and in specifically in Evan Engram, I'm going to get completely clowned on for this. And then, of course, the first touchdown of the game by the Jags was scored by old Evan. So I feel good about it. I'm glad that he came through. I don't know what's going to happen next week. Obviously, it depends on who wins today to see who the Jags play. But it's just pretty funny because I have admittedly crapped on Evan Engram all season. And he came through for me in a super wild card weekend. Game two with the Jags and Chargers. I wanted to play this audio for you, Matt, because after the game, Cameron Wolf, who of course works for NFL Network, he spoke to Zay Jones on the field, and I thought it was an interesting conversation. I mean, they're all obviously just extremely happy, but he gives a lot of praise to Trevor Lawrence and just the faith this team seems to have in their second-year quarterback. We know he's a generational player, but I wanted to play this audio for you just about a minute. So this is Zay Jones speaking to NFL Network's Cameron Wolf after they won against the Chargers last night.
What a comeback. Down 27 points. Can you tell me what the conversation was at halftime to spark this?
Man, look at this. Man, God is good. The guys rallied. They never stopped believing. We came together. There was no finger pointing. We all took responsibility. We looked at ourselves in the mirror. God is good, man. We did it. There was a lot of people who counted you guys out. Four interceptions, down 27. What was said by Trevor Lawrence or Doug Peterson as you guys were trying to rally back in this game? That man is resilient for how old he is, the poise that he has, just the level of comfort that he has on the football field. He didn't bat an eye. Obviously, he was frustrated, but man, what a leader we have in him, the type of character he is, the person he is, so much resilience. I think he's still undefeated on Saturday. It's a blessing to be a part of this team.
I'm just so happy, man. Zay, you mentioned, look at this. The first time this city is hosting a primetime playoff game, and you guys give them this.
Yeah, I know.
What does it mean to kind of share and soak this moment up with a crowd as electric as this one?
It's so beautiful to see all different types of people, the smiles, the excitement, the Duval chants, kids, older people. It's awesome, man. This city has embraced us. I know it looked really bleak in the beginning of the game, but they held with us. I mean, look, you can't even find an empty seat. It's awesome, man. It's a blessing to be a part of. I'm so grateful for this opportunity. Appreciate you, Jay.
That is Cameron Wolf speaking to Jaguars wide receiver Zay Jones. Real quick, before we move on quickly to the Seahawks 49ers game, because I do want to talk about that with you here, Matt, but as we discussed fantasy aspects of last night's game, I still think it'll depend on where Evan Engram signs. Obviously, then we had that discussion before, and I know you say he'll probably just re-sign in Jacksonville. I have a feeling that's, especially after being instrumental to a wild card round, huge comeback win, I feel like that's probably pretty likely, but let's just say he moves on, but everything else stays the same. You're looking at where does Zay Jones go next year, certainly. Where does Christian Kirk go next year? And where does Trevor Lawrence go? I believe Trevor Lawrence, as we discussed last week, finished as a top 10 QB in fantasy football. I wonder, after the top guys of Mahomes, Hurts, let's say Burrow as well, let's say those three guys go off the board, where does Trevor Lawrence go? Or are you even including him above any of those three? I wonder.
So Mahomes, Hurts, Burrow, Allen.
Oh, yeah, Allen. And I guess Lamar Jackson, but it depends with him, situation. Does he resign with the – I'm sure he'll get tagged by the Ravens, but maybe that doesn't happen. He goes to another team in free agency. Like, there's a lot of stuff that could happen with Lamar, but I guess you could include him there too.
Well, I actually think that Lamar is one of those guys that's going to fall and then end up being, you know, a top seven or eight quarterback next year. I think, like, kind of like we expected with, like, Matthew Stafford and Russell Wilson and guys like that, that you can take maybe a little bit later. Maybe I'm jumping the gun a little bit here, but that's kind of where I think that's going to end up. But, man, Trevor Lawrence has probably moved himself ahead of – he's probably moved himself ahead of Justin Herbert here. Like, Justin Fields is going to get drafted high. Justin Fields is probably in that conversation ahead of Trevor Lawrence just because of the running ability.
I can see that.
But I could see Trevor Lawrence going – 6 or 7 among QBs.
Do you wait when you take a QB, like you personally?
Generally speaking, I do, just because I think that there's always, like, look at Kirk Cousins this year. Kirk Cousins finishes as a top 10 quarterback and was drafted at like probably 16, 15. There's always those guys. Like next year, we may be having that conversation about, I don't know, Trey Lance or, although, and we'll get into it. This, like we talked about, the legend of Brock Purdy is pretty impressive. But I do tend to wait on quarterback. Obviously, in single quarterback leagues, in two quarterback leagues, I don't wait. I have the exact opposite approach. I try and lock down my quarterbacks early. But yeah, the Trevor Lawrence thing is super interesting because by like week 10, I was shocked to see that he was in the top 10, because not that he had struggled, but he didn't really string together a lot of good performances consecutively. And then as the season progressed, he started to get a lot better. And then you started to see that big leap forward from Trevor Lawrence, probably around the same time that we saw the big leap forward from Justin Fields. And yeah, maybe it's not so ironic, right? But I do believe that Trevor Lawrence has at least put himself in the conversation to be among the top 5 or 6 drafted quarterbacks next year.
I think that's fair. Like, I do think it, obviously, if you're in a 2QB league, it might be a little different because, like, in 2QB leagues, you talk about the number one overall pick being, is it Christian McCaffrey? Is it Austin Eckler? Probably can't go wrong with either of those two guys. But if you're in a 2QB league and you're telling me your first overall pick is like Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, I'm not going to argue, because those leagues are a little different, right? But I do agree that Trevor Lawrence, Justin Fields, probably going to be drafted in the same stratosphere. And again, probably in the top 5, 6, 7 probably seems to be the general range for those guys. Geno Smith probably going to be drafted Higher than he was this year. Probably impossible not to be, considering that most people did not draft Geno. He was an undrafted free agent as far as fantasy football goes. And he delivered. I think I would still say he delivered yesterday. I know the Seahawks lost the game, but he had a very pretty pass to DK Metcalf in the first half of that game. And I think the game was what? It was 14-13 Seahawks at one point, and they did go on to lose the game 41-23 to the San Francisco 49ers, who are moving on to the second round. So in the end, not a super surprising result, though they did put up a pretty good fight early on. I'm curious, when you look at the fantasy results of what we got yesterday, I mean, DK Metcalf, 10 receptions, 136 yards, and two touchdowns. Kenneth Walker, 15 carries for 63 yards and a touchdown. As you mentioned to start the show, Walker had, I think he had 14 carries in the first half and then one carry in the second half, which obviously is not great. They probably went away from what was working. And as a result, and obviously the 49ers just continued to play very well, and they started turning those field goals into touchdowns. And the Seahawks just didn't have the horses in the race to keep up, and we saw that. But, I mean, I wonder where Kenneth Walker goes, maybe in a more broader conversation, Matt, because, I mean, look, we all know how talented George Kittle is and Christian McCaffrey and Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel. We had the conversation about what a QB change would do to the 49ers last week, so we don't need to necessarily rehash that convo. But as far as the Seahawks go and rookies go specifically, I wonder if this year has changed your opinion or influenced your opinion at all on where to draft rookies, like regardless of their situation, right? Because I feel like this year, and specifically, we've had a pretty good season for fantasy rookies. Like even guys like Jahan Dotson, right? I mean, because Chris Olave, I think, was a, if not an every week start whenever he was healthy, he was pretty close to it. Kenneth Walker, similarly, after he took the starting role, you were starting him basically every week. Dameon Pierce got starts basically every week until the last couple weeks of the season, once everyone realized that the Texans had literally no other player to stop other than Dameon Pierce. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's just there are a lot of rookies that we talked about a lot this year, maybe even more than years past. So I'm curious, A, where you draft Kenneth Walker, and B, if maybe when a Bijan Robinson comes on the scene, if you're just going to draft him no matter where he goes.
So I kind of look at, when it comes to Kenneth Walker, the guys that are ahead of him. And while I do believe that he's like I look at Kenneth Walker and he's probably like running back 12 off the board, maybe a little bit later. Like even if we, like if we go through like McCaffrey, Jonathan Taylor's still going to get drafted ahead of him.
Yeah.
Dalvin Cook, Derrick Henry, Austin Eckler, like we can go down the list, and like 12 might be too high. So if you're willing to wait, like, or like you could end up, I think Kenneth Walker probably goes around RB 15, which is crazy considering the year that he had, which was very good. As it pertains to rookies, here's my only concern. Like, we look at, like, Breece Hall was the top running back that was taken this past season. And Breece Hall did not have the job right away. Breece Hall, it took him, I guess it was about 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks before he got the job, and then everything took off for him. And then he left Michael Carter in the dust. The problem with taking rookies too early is that there is that adjustment period. We talk about, well, for example, and I know you're going to love this this reference because you remind me how I bring him up all the time. James Cook. Look at what James Cook has done. But it took like 13 weeks. And James Cook is maybe a bad example, although he was, I believe, the third running back taken off the board and behind Kenneth Walker. But it took a Rashad Penny injury for Kenneth Walker to get that job. I just think the adjustment period for rookies, even rookie wide receivers, is the same. Elijah Moore 2 years ago. Jamar Chase. Remember the camp that Jamar Chase had? And everybody was talking about he can't see the ball and he's not going to be able to catch it at the NFL level. Like, there are very few guys that come out of the gate like Jamar Chase did. So it's really hard for me to take rookies too early, just because the adjustment period of not only the speed of the NFL game, but being a pro, like there's a lot that goes into that conversation. And I think that's why you still need to hold off on rookies. Like Bijan Robinson is one of the best running back prospects that we've seen, probably the best one since Saquon Barkley. And are we really willing to take Bijan Robinson regardless of landing spot? Cause I think he's one of those guys that it doesn't matter where he ends up, but are you really willing to take him any higher than the third round? Like yeah, that's kind of where, like he's probably going at like RB20 in most leagues because of that rookie factor. In year two, he's probably going in the top five, right? So I tend to wait on rookies. And what I did in one league this year, it was a keeper league. So, for example, I didn't have a lot of high picks because I traded them away. I did that this year, too, and it didn't work. But what I ended up doing was I just said, you know what? I'm just going to draft a bunch of rookie wide receivers and then hope that somebody will pop. Like Chris Olave was pretty good out of the gate this year. Garrett Wilson was good for a 2-week stretch, and then he disappeared for 4 weeks. So that's why you wait on these guys, because there's a lot of inconsistencies in their game. And when you're spending significant draft capital on these guys, they need to produce right away, because that's what you expect from the guys that you're drafting very high.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, like, look, you look at other guys we would have drafted highly, maybe even maybe not this past season, but the year before, who were rookies. And I mean, Najee Harris, for example, was drafted pretty highly when he was a rookie, if only because there was no other competition for touches, and you knew how Big Ben, in essentially what was his last season in the NFL, used running backs, and they used him in very, very effectively, because Najee Harris scored a boatload of touchdowns as a rookie. Not so much in year two. How much of that it was his fault, given that he was dealing with an injury probably all season? Maybe like some of it was, but maybe some of it was injury, some of it was scheme and usage, and just the general ineptitude of the Steelers offense for the most part this season. It got better as the year went on, obviously. Towards the end of the year, this season, I think Najee Harris was a pretty solid, dependable RB2. But I mean, when you draft a guy in the first round, that's not what you want, right? You want like first round, star level, 20 points a game production. And you really only got that out of Najee in like half or full PPR leagues in the last couple weeks of the, maybe last 3-4 weeks of the season. But I digress. I want to take a quick break. When we come back, we will continue the running back fantasy conversation, get into the top 12 running backs, get into the top 12 wide receivers as well, if we have some time. And I want to take a look as well at some of the running backs you might be looking ahead to for next season. Don't forget, at the top of the hour, BJ Rudell from Pro Football Network will join us. We'll ask him some of these same questions as well. I'm curious what rookies he's looking at next season, because those are always fun to take a look at. Of course, we'll maybe get his opinion on the first round and what DFS lineup plays to look at for today's games across the National Football League. But you're listening to The Fantasy Show, Top 12 Running Backs, next across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here with you for a couple hours, here until 10 a.m. Eastern. Here to chat about all things National Football League on this super wild card weekend. 3 games today. We'll get into those games in the next hour. Straight ahead, BJ Rudell from Pro Football Network will discuss about the fantasy season that was. But right now, we're very excited to get into our predictions from September. I believe we put these out on like September 3rd or 4th, Matt, and to see how close we were in some respects, and boy, how far, far away we were in other ones. We were talking about running backs to end the previous segment. So why don't we start with our top 12 running backs of the season? This is how the top 12 shook out in 2022. Now, just a reminder, these stats are for half PPR leagues, and it didn't really matter to say that for QBs, obviously, but for this, yeah, half PPR leagues, as it has been for us for most of the season. And This goes up to the end of week 17 because fantasy leagues, like 99% of fantasy leagues, do not include week 18. So any statistics garnered by basically any player in week 18 were not included in this. So this is just until the end of week 17. So the top 12 at the end of season is as follows. Austin Eckler with 312 points. Christian McCaffrey with 298 points. Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry were 3 and 4, respectively. They were very, very close. Josh Jacobs was phenomenal this season. I don't think anyone had Josh Jacobs finishing in their top 12, but he was very good. Saquon Barkley, 5. Nick Chubb, 6. Tony Pollard, 7. Dalvin Cook, 8. Aaron Jones, 9. Ramondre Stevenson, 10. Miles Sanders, 11. And Jamal Williams, 12. So names like Joe Mixon, Leonard Fournette, Najee Harris, who coincidentally are 13, 14, 15, but Mixon, Fournette, Harris not finishing as top 12 backs, Ezekiel Elliott not finishing as a top 12 back, and Alvin Kamara finishing as RB20 on the season, which is pretty remarkable. For you, Matt, so your predictions were, I think, like, the only real big misses for you, I would say, were, because, I mean, look, I mean, barring injuries, you're probably always going to have a big chunk of the top 12, but DeAndre Swift and Javonte Williams, I would say, and again, Williams was injured and so was Swift for much of the year, but, I mean, you had McCaffrey, Taylor, and I guess Jonathan Taylor, but everyone missed on Jonathan Taylor, right? So, but apart from those guys, like McCaffrey, Eckler, Cook, Jones, Barkley, Henry, those guys were all in the top 12, and your sleeper was Travis Etienne, and boy, he was, if not, like, great this season in terms of consistency, ultimately, I would say Etienne had a good year.
Yeah, I think he finished as RB16, and again, didn't take over that lead back role until, because that was, this was essentially Travis Etienne's rookie year, right?
Yeah, right.
He didn't take over that lead role until James Robinson essentially like sat out a game. I want to say it was against the Giants, and Travis Etienne went banana sandwich. Like, he went absolutely crazy in that game. He was incredible. You know, the Kamara miss and the Swift one, I feel, was largely based on injury, because his fantasy and usage, let's be real, because his fantasy points per touch is pretty incredible. But like, the Kamara thing was the most bizarre to me, because there was no other competition for touches. Like, let's be real, Mark Ingram is not good at this stage in his career. He was good at one point. He's not good at this stage in his career. And the usage for him, like, I thought, and we talked about this in the preseason, I thought he was going to be an absolute PPR monster. I thought he was going to have like 80 catches, because we looked at that offense and said, okay, Michael Thomas is back and Michael Thomas should have a good year. And then he got hurt. They brought in Jarvis Landry, who I thought was going to be the perfect addition to this squad. He got hurt. And then when he played, was largely unproductive aside from maybe 2 weeks. Chris Olave was really the only guy that was any good consistently. And then Taysom Hill started taking away some touches and all that. So the Kamara thing, like, when you have a guy that is that good, I don't understand how you don't use him. It's the same conversation that I have with DeAndre Swift. If you have a guy that's that talented, why don't you use him? And the thing with Kamara is, and we tend to forget this, he's probably getting suspended next year.
Yeah, yeah.
So not only is his stock going to fall because of the season he had, but there's a chance that he misses maybe the first 3 or 4 games of the year. So that, like, I'll tell you right now, I'm not going to have Alvin Kamara in my top 12 next year.
Where do you draft him?
You know what? He probably goes around RB20 or 22. If he gets suspended.
Right.
Which we do believe is going to happen.
Let's say
we have any inside information.
Let's say he gets suspended in time for drafts, whether it's at the end of August or beginning of September, and you know that's happening. You know, let's say it's at least a 4-game suspension, 4 to 6 games. Let's just go with a 4-game suspension for the beginning of September for Alvin Kamara. Again, there's no concrete information on this. We have no idea what will happen between now, January, and let's say August or September. But let's just say, for the sake of this conversation, he is suspended by the beginning of the season. Do you spend a third round pick on Alvin Kamara?
No chance.
You spend a fifth round pick on him?
Probably not.
Really? I think I might pull the trigger on him with a fifth round pick. I might.
So here's, and I was just, this just came to me because I remember doing drafts when there was speculation that he was going to be suspended.
Okay.
And with that and coming off of a good year last year, he went as like RB 14 to 16.
Okay.
So that puts him in the category of if we know that he's suspended for four games.
Yeah.
Like that was with the chance that he was going to be suspended. If we know he's going to be suspended for four games plus the year that he had, we're talking about between RB 22 and RB 25.
Here's the thing. What I might do in that case, depending on it would depend on your league, obviously, but I'm in a couple of leagues where I'm in keeper leagues and the you know, especially in auction leagues where the price you get a player for is baked into to a certain degree what your keeper value is, where it's like you can keep it for an additional year, but it's cost you an extra $5 after the first 3 years. If you can get Alvin Kamara on a relatively cheap auction value, keeper value, whatever you want to call it, because of the suspension, then I might do that. Like I might go ahead and do that, but obviously that's baked into the cost of trying to acquire him, right?
100%, and that I would absolutely do, because I do believe that is going to be an option for a lot of people, especially in those formats. Would I be keeping Alvin Kamara in like three or even four keeper leagues? No chance.
Yeah.
I just think that there's better value out there for you. And I'd be curious to see what, like, we don't even know who the starting quarterback of the New Orleans Saints is going to be. Like that's one team that we have not talked about as a destination for any quarterback. Like if maybe this is a bad example. If Derek Carr goes to New Orleans, do we change our tune on what New Orleans is? Like Michael Thomas is not going to be back next year, I don't believe. I think that ship has sailed. Jarvis Landry is on a 1-year deal. He's probably not back. So you have Chris Olave, you have Juwan Johnson at the tight end position. You've got, I'm sure Taysom Hill is going to be back because of course he is.
Yep.
And then I would anticipate that they're going to draft a wide receiver. I anticipate that they're probably going to draft a running back as well. So that's a really interesting team going into next season. But Alvin Kamara is also older, right? Like we don't, that's the other thing that we don't talk about when it comes to players, you know, in redraft, we tend to focus on dynasty for that. But Alvin Kamara at the start of next season is going to be 28 years old. And I know that people are there. That's not old. If for a running back, it's old. And I know that there's still tread on the tires because he hasn't had a super crazy workload throughout the course of his career. But, you know, age, usage from this past season, productivity from this past season, plus a suspension. Like I just keep talking myself out of Alvin Kamara anywhere near RB 20.
Yeah. Okay, I would imagine if the QB situation is not a little more clear next season. And I think we've already heard that Dennis Allen from Mickey Loomy is going to be back as the head coach of the Saints next year, apparently. So I guess, I mean, things can change. Maybe that's like GM speak or what have you, but if that is the case and Sean Payton is again not coaching next year, I don't know if he's going to be coaching the Chargers after what we saw last night, but if he is not coaching or Denver, for example, but if he is not coaching again in 2023 and Dennis Allen is that guy for New Orleans and we're again talking about either Andy Dalton. Okay, well, if it's Andy Dalton, then yeah, I don't think things really change from what you say. If it is Jameis Winston, I might take a chance on some New Orleans players, but again, I don't know if any of those players in the first five rounds of the draft, four or five rounds, are Alvin Kamara, because like you said, he did not have a very good season. 171 points in half PPR, below guys like Kenneth Walker, James Conner, Najee Harris, Etienne, Leonard Fournette. It was just not a very good season. Honestly, I'm almost surprised that he only finished 5 points behind Kenneth Walker, but I suppose we have to remember that, like we were talking about before when we were talking about Seahawks 49ers, Walker only really assumed this role in the right after Rashad Penny went down, and he was playing pretty well Penny was for the first couple of months of the season. So, or a couple of weeks of the season. So, hey, Kenneth Walker ahead of Alvin Kamara, maybe not so surprising after all. I do want to get to a couple more things with the running backs here, and we can get to the wide receivers a little later on as well. But you look at, we talked about Ramondre Stevenson, for example. He finished as a top 10 running back, and you know, he actually only finished as a top 10 running back by a hair over Miles Sanders. He had 203.9 points, and Miles Sanders had 203.4 points. So he was like essentially one catch away from not finishing in the top 10 in half PPR. But hey, I mean, if you had either of those guys this year, given what it probably cost you to acquire them, I don't think anyone's complaining too much, because they were probably acquired on the cheap. Tony Pollard as well, maybe not as cheap, but he was probably acquired, because I think he was a pretty popular riser by the time he got to drafts at late August, early September. But even so, Tony Pollard and those guys were acquired for less than a first, second, or third round pick, I would imagine. Probably not going to be the case in 2023 drafts. But I do wonder, of those guys, who do you think, and of those guys again, Tony Pollard, Ramondre Stevenson, Miles Sanders, of those guys, who do you think has the most likelihood of repeating something close to what we saw in 2022 next season? I want to say it's Tony Pollard. Like, I'd like to say that, because that guy has some real burst, but he is also, I believe, an unrestricted free agent, right? So if he goes to another team, I mean, maybe he still ends up replicating his something close to his 2022 season, but he got a lot of touches this year. And I wonder if he signs the new team, what touches would look like. Again, obviously we talk about this a lot in the sense of Matt, you know, do teams want to shell out a lot of dough for running backs these days? I would say no, generally speaking, right? So I wonder how much money he'll get on the open market versus just re-signing with Dallas, where I'm sure he's very familiar with and likes it there and so on. He has a pretty good role, which I'm sure would only grow if Ezekiel Elliott ever, you know, retires or just is phased out of the offense. So I'm curious of the three, of Pollard, Stevenson, Sanders, who you like the most to repeat their stats next year?
To me, it does feel like Ramondre Stevenson, only because I know what his role is going to be. Damian Harris is a free agent. I do not believe he's going to be back. And he certainly showed us what he can do as an all-purpose back, which was a big surprise. If Tony Pollard was staying in Dallas, and I knew he was staying in Dallas, then it would be Tony Pollard. Just because, you know, you talk about that breakaway ability that he has. And again, another guy that is very good in the passing game. To me, he would be number one, but like, and I'm not including Miles Sanders in this, because that's another guy who we're not sure what his future is going to look like either, because I believe he's also a free agent, if I'm not mistaken. And they're going to have to make decisions on these guys. Stevenson, to me, just because we know how the Patriots are going to, I mean, we don't know, because they're going to hire an offensive coordinator, like a real one, not the two fake ones that they had this
anyone
year.
Will be better. Literally anyone would be better. You and I going down to New England to call play, me, you, and Austin calling plays would be better for the Patriots offense than what we saw this past season, quite literally.
Yeah, it was pathetic. But
Austin,
what it,
I bet,
what
calls
it was,
a lot of draw plays. That's Austin's favorite play, the draw play.
I got third and longs, boys.
Austin on third and long has the NFL blitz Hail Mary play. Yeah. When it comes to Stevenson, I mean, generally speaking, and I know it's been, you know, when Josh McDaniels has been the offensive coordinator, but it does feel like a Bill Belichick MO to run the ball. And Ramondre Stevenson at points during the season was the only running back that was seeing the field. Like, that's what it felt like. It felt like he was playing like 99% of the snaps, like, yeah, every week. So
there was a game where Stevenson, I think Damian Harris was out, might have been the game against the Cardinals. And there was a game where he ran the ball like five times in a row. They take him out for a breather. The next guy goes in, gets tackled for a loss, and then not another running back saw the field for the rest of the game.
Yeah. Yeah. It's wild. And that's the type of role that he had. Do I expect that someone like Pierre Strong or Kevin Harris are going to have a bigger role next year? I would lean towards probably Pierre Strong having a larger role. But I still think that Ramondre Stevenson is the guy. He's a big guy. He's like we talked about, he's very good in the pass catching game, and he's an excellent runner. Like, for a big man, he moves very well. So I think that there's that to me is the most repeatable, just because I know what the role is. Like, Miles Sanders' role was, there was one game where it was one game where he had like a plus matchup and he got like 5 carries.
Yeah.
And you started to wonder, like, okay, what is this? Because remember, Miles Sanders said in the offseason, do not draft me for fantasy football purposes. Do not. Ended up being a false prophecy by Miles Sanders. But when I look at his usage some weeks, it's very strange. And I do believe that Ramondre Stevenson has the most repeatable. Is it a top 10 finish? I mean, I think top 12 is a little bit more likely, maybe top 15, but I just don't know what happens with the other two guys. Like, okay, here's an example. If Tony Pollard goes to Cleveland and takes the quote unquote Kareem Hunt role, how do we feel about that?
Oh, I hate that. I hate it.
So, and I don't think that that's going to be where, but that's the situation. Okay, here's another one. Let's say the Baltimore Ravens move on from Gus Edwards. And Tony Pollard goes there and he's with J.K. Dobbins.
That's tough.
I don't think that's repeatable, despite the fact that the Ravens run the ball.
What if Tony Pollard goes to Miami? What if he goes to Miami and becomes the guy over Raheem? If he goes to Miami, he is instantly the most talented running back in that room over Raheem Mostert and Jeff Wilson Jr., right? Like, but then the other half of that is, does Mike McDaniel following the really his own footsteps of the running game in San Francisco, where you're using multiple guys, I wonder.
Well, okay, here's an example then. Mike McDaniel was a big proponent of bringing in Chase Edmonds, and they paid him and didn't use him.
Right. He was my sleeper, so that didn't
work. Yeah, hey, listen, I thought Chase Edmonds was in for a big year as well. What do we always say? Follow the money. And then it was Raheem Mostert. And then it was Jeff Wilson Jr. Makes no sense. So landing spot for these guys, like landing spot for guys that you look at and go, okay, so for example, Bijan Robinson, I don't think, for those that don't know, running back from Texas, that is going to be the first running back taken off the board. Bijan Robinson, it doesn't matter where he ends up. I'll still invest capital in him. But the other guys that we mentioned are not good enough to have that conversation. So landing spot absolutely does matter for certain players.
I am very much looking forward to, this is what I think will happen. If Miles Sanders, yeah, he is a UFA. So after this season, this will happen. The Eagles will beat the Cowboys in the playoffs. Cowboys will beat the Buccaneers tomorrow night. Eagles will beat the Cowboys in the divisional round. And then in the offseason, regardless of what happens to either of these teams, what will happen in the end is Miles Sanders will leave an unrestricted free agency. We'll never talk about him again fantasy-wise. And Tony Pollard will sign with the Eagles, and we'll all freak out. That's what will happen for Tony Pollard. And that's my official prediction. He signs with the Eagles in free agency after the Eagles like win a Super Bowl or lose in the Super Bowl or lose in the NFC Championship game or what have you. And then we freak out about his perceived value based on both how he and Miles Sanders finished, because it does kind of feel like whoever the running back is in Philly will just, because of the nature of their high-powered offense, and they have a lot of pieces that fit very well in that system, that whoever is the running back RB1 there will probably, and I mean, you know, RB1 in Philly is probably a guy named Jalen Hurts, honestly, but after him, the guy still gets a lot of touches, whoever is the main running back there. So if it is Tony Pollard or Miles Sanders, or honestly, if they just end up making Kenneth Gainwell that guy, it'll probably be pretty well, work out pretty well for the Philly offense. Real quick, before we take a quick break, you mentioned taking the Kareem Hunt role in Cleveland, and we saw this year Kareem Hunt basically have no role. Like, there almost like wasn't really a Kareem Hunt role. It was just Nick Chubb, and that was it. And Nick Chubb finished as RB6. He had 247 points in half PPR. He was 10 points or 8 points or so behind Saquon Barkley, and he was about 20 points ahead of Tony Pollard. So there wasn't like a huge gap either way between him and the guys ahead of him and behind him. But I do wonder, like, the end of the season for Nick Chubb, Matt, was pretty forgettable. If only be, and it coincides directly with the return of Deshaun Watson, or the debut of Deshaun Watson, from a fantasy perspective. When he became the quarterback of the Cleveland Browns, the running game just did not look good. I mean, he also did not look good, Deshaun Watson. He looked terrible. What a shame that happened for the Cleveland Browns. But Nick Chubb, as the main fantasy asset in Cleveland, I was thrilled with how he was being used when Jacoby Brissett was the QB. And then I had him a lot of shares of Nick Chubb last year, and he fell off hard, like in a massive way. Does that worry you at all for next year?
In a way, here's the thing. I don't think so, only because I do believe that Deshaun Watson is going to be better next year. And I think that when you have better, because Jacoby Brissett was better than Deshaun Watson last year, this past season, no question. So I think when you have better quarterback play, it opens up lanes for Nick Chubb, because it really did feel like there were teams that were not worried about Deshaun Watson and his ability to throw the football, whereas they were actually at points worried about Jacoby Brissett, which is such a weird thing to say. But let's face it, Deshaun Watson barely played football over the last 2 years. So that's why I look at the situation and I think Deshaun Watson can't be any worse than he was this year. If he is, then they spent a lot of money yeah. on a lot worse.
Yeah.
And good for you. But I think he's going to be better, which in turn opens up more avenues for Nick Chubb. I just think the running game as a whole will be better next season when Deshaun Watson has a full training camp where he's working with the starters and working with all these guys. I think that that's going to change. I think it will be better. The other thing was that late in the year, Nick Chubb was just not getting into the end zone. And part of that is because the offense was stalling and they weren't able to move the ball. So a lot of what Nick Chubb does is score touchdowns. And that's where I don't want to say a lot of his fantasy value is, but a good chunk of his fantasy value is you can count on Nick Chubb to get double-digit touchdowns as the starting running back for the Cleveland Browns. And we just couldn't count on that late in the year. And that's where I think the biggest difference lied, in large part because Deshaun Watson was just horrible.
Yeah, I think Nick Chubb is probably still a back end, middle to back end first round pick, I would imagine, in most drafts. And even in, like, I feel like I got him as a quote unquote consolation prize in a lot of leagues, and he was very, very good. He propelled me to the playoffs in a lot of leagues, but because of the way it fell off, it didn't work out in those particular leagues. And the one league I did win in was a league I did not have Nick Chubb in, which was fortunate because I tried to get him and he was drafted before I could get there. So it'll be interesting to see what Nick Chubb's usage in 2023 does look like. I'm sure we'll get a bit of a hint as to how it will look like in the off season. But for now, I think he does reside as, middle to back end first round pick. We'll ask that question to our guest straight ahead, BJ Rudell, writer analyst for Pro Football Network. He'll join us straight ahead on the Fantasy Show. Also want to get his take on how, where you draft guys who are affected by QBs. Like, where do you draft a Garrett Wilson not knowing who the QB is for the New York Jets next season? That's an interesting question that I'm hoping to get BJ's take on. BJ Rudell from the Pro Football Network next on the Fantasy Show. Show and Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is The Fantasy Show with Sho Ali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour two of The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sho Ali, Matt Marchese here with you this Sunday morning. Good morning, everyone. We are here to discuss week 18, super wild card weekend across the National Football League. I got so used to saying the numbers, forgot that we are in a numberless week. It is super wild card weekend. We got some good games yesterday, three more today, one more tomorrow to wrap up this first round of the NFL playoffs and to help us get into the games this weekend. And of course, to discuss the fantasy season that was, our guest, BJ Rudell, writer and analyst for Pro Football Network. BJ, how's it going this morning?
Good, Matt. How are you guys?
We're doing very well. We appreciate you joining us. We obviously we'll get to some of the fantasy and stuff that we got this past yesterday, certainly, and what to expect tomorrow. We'll get to all of the actual fantasy stuff in a little bit here. But I first of all wanted to get to the result we got from the Jacksonville Jaguars last night. Yeah. The third largest comeback in NFL postseason history. 31-30, the Jags win over the Chargers. It was a wild win. I'm curious just what your thoughts were. What were your immediate thoughts after the end of that game?
It's funny. We had some friends over for dinner last night. I have kids. They have kids. And the game was about to start, and I turned to my friend, the other dad, and you know, we're big football fans. And I said, you know, that we were talking about the game, and I said, you know, the Chargers could jump out 14-0. And I trust the Jaguars down 14-0 more than I trust the Chargers down 14-0. And the reason is the Jaguars are at a different level of confidence and cohesion, having their guys healthy for just about the whole season, growing up in basically a 3-year run. I mean, obviously the receivers are wildly different than they were a couple years ago, even last year. But the cohesion of that team, led by a coach who is a player's coach, who's won a Super Bowl, who Trevor Lawrence believes in, I had a lot more confidence in them than a Chargers team that inexplicably lost Mike Williams in a meaningless game to a back injury, which really changed the complexion. When you're relying on Donald Parham and DeAndre Carter as your tertiary options. And I'll just say one more thing, Matt, is that I wrote about this for Pro Football Network. I said the X factor in this game is Austin Eckler on the ground. And I wrote, I know that sounds crazy. Austin Eckler is one of the best running backs in the game. He has been awful on the ground. With the exception of two games this season, he averaged 3.5 yards a carry on the ground. Jaguars are tough against the run. I could not understand why Eckler caught only, I think, one or two passes for 8 yards. That is his calling card. And the fact that Eckler was not used in that fashion, that the Chargers just leaned back and relied on deeper passes from Herbert, even up 27-0, 27-7 or whatever, it didn't seem to make sense, and Eckler turned out to be the wild card. He put them out to a 14-0 lead, but they got away from him. And the fact that he could not run on the ground, as he hasn't done for most of the season, is a concerning thing for these Chargers heading into next season. They need a bell cow with Eckler serving as the complimentary 200 touchback. They can't have Eckler doing 300 touches. That's just not how he's built.
So BJ, when I'm watching that game and I see, you know, the wheels start to go in motion, and the first thing I thought was, there's no way that the Chargers are going to do this, right? Like, they can't, because we've already seen one large comeback this season when the Colts blew a 33-point lead against the Vikings. There's no way it's going to happen again. But the guy that kind of sparks the comeback is Evan Engram, and you know, Show and I have had conversations about Evan Engram a lot over the course of the year. Show, not a big fan of Evan Ingram's because of past failures, and I get that. But we've seen what Doug Peterson has done with tight ends over the course of his coaching tenure, whether it be Zach Ertz, whether it be Dallas Goedert, whatever the case may be. If, from a fantasy perspective, if Evan Engram is anywhere other than Jacksonville, how do you approach him for next year?
You know what? I was the Show. I whiffed completely on Engram. I didn't even have him in my top, I don't think, 18 going into the season. And I admit that freely. I saw what he did with the Giants. I saw the Jaguars with a pretty robust receiving core with Christian Kirk and Zay Jones and a two-headed backfield at the time, James Robinson. And I just thought, where does Engram fit into this? But you've got a guy who is fifth in the league this regular season in targets, which is insane to me that Engram was fifth in the league in targets. And he caught, he had a great catch rate. I can't remember what it was, but it was over 70%. This is a guy who just basically needed a different system. And so, credit to you, Matt, for, you know, because you're right. Peterson has done this before with tight ends, and Engram is this guy who can take over a game like few other tight ends can. You've got Kelce, Mark Andrews, George Kittle to an extent, but he's not a volume-based guy anymore in that offense, and maybe TJ Hockenson. And so you're starting to look at Engram as a top six, top seven fantasy tight end next season if you trust that the Jaguars, they've already won a game. So clearly, you know, in the playoffs, this is an ascending team. No doubt about it. they're going to be pushing to be division winners for years to come at this point. So you have to believe that this offense is going to get better next season because that's the way it's built. And you have to believe that Engram probably won't regress. I think he was the fifth or sixth best tight end this year. And I think as long as he stays healthy, because health has also been an issue with him, drops had been a concern. And he only had four touchdowns this year. You figure that's the reverse regression waiting to happen in a better offense next year. Engram becomes this very appealing guy. If you don't get Kelce, if you don't get Hockenson, if you don't get Andrews, man, Engram is kind of near the top of that next tier. He's far safer than these other guys like Schultz and Goddard and you know, even Freiermuth and even George Kittle, who gets hurt just about every year. Maybe Engram becomes the number four guy in fantasy next year. It's weird to think about, but that offense is only going to get better, and that to me is the appealing thing about investing in a fantasy guy.
Chatting with BJ Rudell, fantasy writer, analyst for Pro Football Network. Show Ali and Matt Marchese here with you on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. As we discuss the tight ends, BJ, I mean, you mentioned Evan Engram and you mentioned Travis Kelce, obviously, because he was so good. Like, the gulf between him and the second guy is as massive as the gulf between like 2 and 50, essentially, right? Like, it's a massive gulf. So I wonder, like, with Travis Kelce being a year older in 2023, I believe he's going to be 34, I think. He probably
turned 34 in October.
Right, so there you go. So by the beginning of the season, he'll still be 34, close to 35. I wonder, do you still invest a high-end draft pick, like a back-end first-round pick, on Travis Kelce, knowing that age usually is not friendly to most football players?
I had this conversation with a reader the other day because Kelce, to me, is a fascinating situation. He had more targets. He had, I think, a record number of targets for him, 152. His target share was like 23-25% on the team. There was no true number one. Juju Smith-Schuster was kind of the number one by default. But Kelce stepped up in the absence of Tyreek Hill. Smith-Schuster is on a one-year contract, I think. Marquez Valdez-Scantling is not the answer. This is a team, I think the Chiefs, so much of Kelce's value, in my opinion, depends on whether the Chiefs win a Super Bowl. If they win it all this year, I think they keep the gang together. And I think Kelce wins, in a fantasy perspective, those who have Kelce win that battle. If the Chiefs fall short, I think they go back to the drawing board and they say, we have one Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes in his pre-prime and heading into his prime. That's not enough. We need to get a number one. We trade DeAndre Hopkins is getting dangled out there. Maybe they trade for him. Maybe Davante Adams can be had because if Derek Carr's out of Vegas, where does Adams sit in that? You know, does Adams want to be part of a rebuilding process in Vegas? Probably not at age 30. So there might be some appeal out there for the Chiefs, if they don't win at all, to get that next big number one wideout. And I hate to say it for Kelce fans, but that will be bad news for Kelce's fantasy value. It doesn't mean he doesn't get 250 points, but it means 300 plus is tougher because suddenly you're not getting a 25% target share in a more run-friendly offense. If Pacheco and McKinnon are back, that's a tough duo. And then you've got a true number one receiver, and you have tertiary options. I don't know that they want a 34-year-old Kelce to get overworked during the regular season when it comes down to those final 3 to 4 games in the playoffs that are going to decide whether the Chiefs have made good.
BJ, just as a quick aside, just because you mentioned Kelce and maybe looking into next year, did the last 3 or 4 games concern you at all? Because he was... For people that took Travis 100%. Kelce very high, you look at his performances and you go, that was a guy that I was going to ride to a fantasy championship. And you did anything but, unless you had a really good roster outside of Travis Kelce. Does that kind of irk you a little bit and then just say, okay, maybe we need to dial it back a little bit here with Travis Kelce, especially if they don't add another wide receiver?
One of the reasons why I was concerned about Kelce even this season, and I was more concerned than I should have been in hindsight, was he tailed off last season. He had that miracle game where he led the comeback with Mahomes against the Chargers, and I think it was week 15. He had like 40 fantasy points. In his other games, he had 5-something and like 13. In his other 4 games to close out the season, he was dropping passes. He wasn't looking right. And he was, from what I saw from him, it looked like, and he was a strong finisher for most of his earlier career. If you look at how he did in the fantasy playoffs, where if you're drafting Kelce, you want a guy in the fantasy playoffs like Kelce who's going to have 10 plus more points than any other manager with their tight end is going to have. And the last 2 seasons, that hasn't been the case. This season and last season, that hasn't been the case. There is some concern with Kelce. And I have all these models, which sound ridiculous, Matt, when you know you bring someone on your show and it's like, I have all these models, these spreadsheets, you know, on my computer, but this is what I do for a living. And I wanted to try to figure out over the summer, what is old age for a position? When do the steep drop-offs happen? What's that?
I like that. I like that concept. Bring it on.
because, you know, running back, the popular notion is it's 30, and some of it depends on how much usage they get, you know, heading into 30, heading into even 28. But with tight ends, it's a little bit different because the wear and tear isn't the same. But old age tends to happen somewhere between 32, 34 years old. And there's this whole history of guys from Delonte Walker to Antonio Gates and other guys who you start to see, you know, they're popular top 5 tight ends until suddenly they crash. Sometimes it's an injury that they never recover from because their body is older and they don't recover as easily from these injuries. Sometimes it's just they are not the same tight end that they used to be. And with Kelce, it's really hard to say it because when they are elite, we cannot imagine anything other than eliteness. But Kelce's going to, like we said, Kelce's going to be 34 in October. He is at that point right now where he's not getting better. So when if you're thinking about keeping him in a keeper league, if you're thinking about investing a first-round pick in him, you have to understand that every year it gets harder to imagine him being elite because at this point, 32 to 34 years old, is when almost every elite tight end, with a few exceptions, if they have not crashed already, they crash in that range. And I'll give you one more quick example of like, and this goes a little bit off of it, Matt, but just to show how these like, you know, how this works. Dual threat quarterbacks, exact same thing. And I didn't discover that until it was too late because I was high on Russell Wilson this summer. I was thinking, well, of course, Russell Wilson, he's got everything he needs to get 11, 12 wins for Denver to be a top 6, top 7 quarterback. He's going to get back on top. And when he didn't, I started going through the numbers and going through these dual threat quarterbacks and started discovering that between age 30 to 32, most dual threat quarterbacks crash. They just completely, from Cam Newton, Michael Vick had a year or two delay because he was out of football. But these guys tend to crash by around 30 to 32. And you see Russell Wilson, age 33, 34, inexplicably plummet. And when you start to see these trends, we have to either act on them or ignore them. And in my line of work, I have to act on them. And that's why Kelce next year, if they get a true number one wideout, I'm going to be fading him in the first couple rounds because I don't think he's going to be a 300-point guy. If he's 250, that's great. But that's not, to me, that's not worth grabbing in the first 2 rounds.
Chatting with BJ Rudell here on the Fantasy Show, showing Matt with you across the Sportsnet Radio Network. You know, one thing BJ had asked Matt for before we brought you on was the idea of drafting guys who have high variability based on who their QB might be in 2023. And I can think of, at least off the top of my head, the best example might be someone like Garrett Wilson, right? Like his draft stock, he's a stud. He looks great. He's a very talented player. Yeah. But at the same time, like his draft stock in 2023 from a fantasy perspective is probably heavily tied to whoever the QB is, right? Like it seems as though Zach Wilson is not that going to be that guy. It probably won't be Mike White. But if it's like Derek Carr or someone else, where are you drafting or how high would you be willing to look at Garrett Wilson? And I'm curious if there are any other examples that come to mind.
Yeah, the great question, because it works in kind of an inverted way too, where you get, you know, even in with running backs like Josh Jacobs, what is his value coming off of roughly 400 touch season, which is very heavy and a regression risk for running back, you know, where, depending on where he goes, is he splitting touches with some other running back, or is he his own guy on a bad, in a bad offense? That changes dramatically. It's a great question. I think if, you know, Derek Carr to me is, I remember last summer there was popular talk on social media about Derek Carr could probably fetch a first round pick. And I had to very quietly restrain myself from responding and saying, I get the fact that he's an established quarterback, but the question becomes, are you a franchise quarterback or a franchise elevating quarterback? Franchise elevating quarterback, you get what, you know, you can get whatever you want. Franchise quarterback usually means you're the best guy that team can get. Realistically, you're top 16, top 18, and you get the job done. But the fact is, Derek Carr had everything he needed. Injuries obviously ravaged that team, but there's no reason the team should have been that bad, and Carr folded when it mattered most. I would be shocked if the Jets got Carr. I think it would show a certain degree of desperation, especially in a division where the Jets are long shots to finish in the top two and essentially secure a playoff spot, at least in the next year or two. Unless the Dolphins are completely different next year, which I don't expect, although Tua Tagovailoa, his status is up in the air. But still, between the Dolphins and the Patriots, I don't know that a quarterback is going to solve the Jets' problems unless it's a top-10 quarterback. So Garrett Wilson, to me, is probably a top-12, top-14 guy because he is that good. Elijah Moore, former fourth-round pick, was never going to be the guy in that receiving core. Breece Hall will be back, which will help that offense tremendously. When he got hurt, the whole complexion of that team changed, that offense changed. And Corey Davis isn't really a threat. So to your point, Derek Carr comes over. Yeah, I think there's a nominal advantage for Garrett Wilson. Maybe he's 10 or something like that. But to get into that top five range, you need, you know, or to be that the guy, and Garrett Wilson could be eventually a top five receiver, you need someone who's, you know, who's not going to be Derek Carr. I hate to say it like that. I think Derek Carr is a solid quarterback, but he's not necessarily he doesn't necessarily elevate receivers the way that a lot of other quarterbacks do in the league. Devontae Adams, I think, had more to do with Derek Carr's success than Derek Carr had to do with Devontae Adams' success. I think objectively that is true. And I think Garrett Wilson is going to be, you know, one of those 1,100-yard, six touchdown, maybe 1,200-yard, six touchdown. That's what you're going to get out of him unless the Jets completely go all in on a franchise elevating quarterback.
BJ, just before we let you go, maybe give us a couple of players that you're looking at for next year as guys that you're looking to maybe take that next step or a big leap. And not rookies. You and I talked about that. We're not ready for the rookie talk yet. That'll be later. But maybe guys that are, you know, maybe the role changed throughout the year, or someone just that you have your eye on. Because, like, for me, I put James Cook's name out there because I don't think that Devin Singletary is going to be back. And he's been really good since getting more touches. He's been super explosive. Is there one or two guys that you have kind of pinpoint that you say, these are my guys going into next year?
It's funny because I usually have a list of about 50 guys. And I know that no one wants to hear that. I'll give you a dark horse candidate, which is Rondale Moore. I think, you know, if DeAndre Hopkins is out of Arizona, Marquise Brown is not he was a number one by default in Baltimore. I think Rondale Moore could become the number one in Arizona. He's completely off radars in terms of, I don't think he'll be top 50 going into next season in terms of people's mindset. But he is someone who could step up, former second round pick, and be an incredible asset. I'll say the same thing about Tutu Atwell, former second-round pick. If the Rams just give up on Allen Robinson, if Van Jefferson is not necessarily the talent that they need as a number two receiver, Tutu Atwell has the skill set to be kind of a complementary piece to Cooper Kupp in a very top-heavy offense with possibly a reduced defense. So those are a couple, like, you know, guys that are long shots, deep cut kind of guys. I would say, honestly, DeAndre Swift, going into the final year of his contract, is very intriguing to me. He was underutilized, partly because I think the Lions understand that Swift has been getting hurt every season, and they needed to manage his reps. And Jamal Williams is a scoring machine. I think there's easy Jamal Williams regression potential because Jamal Williams is not very efficient on the ground. The Lions are going to have just as dynamic an offense as they had this year, but better with Jamison Williams having a full season under his belt. I think DeAndre Swift is one of those sneaky guys who has been dangled as a top 10, top 8 running back in fantasy the last 2 years, but hasn't stayed healthy. But on paper, if you look at just how, you know, 5+ yards a carry, he's one of the best pass catching backs in the game. The guy I'll leave you with is DeAndre Swift, because in a high powered offense with an aging complementary running back who is mostly TD dependent, if Swift can stay healthy, that's the big if. He was a top 20 running back this year on less than 150 touches. That's almost unheard of. And so you imagine that there is a huge growth potential for someone like Swift. He's already proven that on a per game basis, he can get it done. He just has to stay healthy to be a top 10 guy.
The Detroit Lions offense is going to be a lot of fun to watch next year with the addition of Jamison Williams. And yeah, Swift, along with guys like in other teams, J.K. Dobbins, all the talent in the world, they just have to stay healthy. So we'll look forward to see what they do. Always look forward to see your work on Twitter, on social media. B.J. Riddell joining us here, a fantasy writer and analyst from the Pro Football Network. B.J., we appreciate you waking up early with us on a Sunday morning. We'll talk to you again later on this offseason.
Thanks, Sean, Matt. Take care.
There he goes. B.J. Riddell again from Pro Football Network. We're going to take a step aside, take a very, very quick break. When we come back, we will get back into the top 12 lists. I think we have time, Marchese, to do one more. Maybe we can do the top 12 wide receivers and then maybe share some Super Bowl predictions, excuse me, before we get out of here and make way for George and the boys for Inside the Lines at the top of the hour. But top 12 wide receivers next on the Fantasy Show, Sean Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Ali, Matt Marchese here with you for one more segment. We'll get to some Super Bowl predictions a little later on in the show. Share the playoff bracket. I will freely admit my bracket has already been busted. No more perfect bracket for show because I did have the Chargers winning. So thanks a lot, Trevor Lawrence. No, actually, I vastly prefer the Jags winning to the Chargers just because it's more fun. I did jokingly say to Donovan Bennett earlier this week that the Jags at Bills for the AFC Championship would be a lot of fun, but somehow, some way, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that is probably not going to happen. But hey, if crazier things happen in the NFL, I'm not so sure. But either way, we'll get into those playoff brackets and Super Bowl predictions to wrap up the show. But right now, Matt, I wanted to get to our top 12 wide receivers of the year. This is how, and again, this is for half PPR formats, but this is how the top 12 wide receivers, again, stats ending at the end of week 17, because most fantasy leagues do not continue into week 18. This year, there are some extraordinary circumstances this year, obviously, but for the most part, week 18 does not have any fantasy significance. But half PPR leagues, this is the top 12 of 2022. Justin Jefferson, Tyreek Hill, Davante Adams went 1, 2, 3. They weren't exactly super close to one another. Justin Jefferson, 298 points. Tyreek Hill, 284. Davante Adams, 265. They weren't exactly like really close to one another, but they were 1, 2, 3. A.J. Brown, Stephon Diggs, CeeDee Lamb, 4, 5, 6. A.J. Brown was about 2 points ahead of Stephon Diggs, so that was pretty close all season. Jaylen Waddle, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Amari Cooper, 7, 8, 9, 213 points for Jaylen Waddle. So the Miami Dolphins supporting two top 10 wide receivers, 9, 10, 11, 12 going to, Amari Cooper, 10, 11, 12, Devontae Smith, Mike Evans, and T. Higgins wrapping up the top 12. I got to say, like, T. Higgins being above Jamar Chase, when I looked at it at the end of the season, I was a little surprised, Matt. But I guess overall, given that Ja'Marr Chase did miss a chunk of time right there in the middle of the season with a shoulder issue, and that he still finished as the 15th overall wide receiver and was actually only 2 points behind T. Higgins for that spot, I guess it's not that shocking in the end.
No, I actually had both Bengals finishing in the top 12. I had T. Higgins actually finishing 11 and he finished 12. So I felt pretty good about that. But, you know, this felt like it was kind of the sweet spot of the bat, in my opinion, only because the wide receiver position just felt a little bit more predictable, didn't it? I mean, we missed on, I know I did. I can't remember if you did as well, but Tyreek Hill, I did not have in my top 12. Shame on me. I did not have Amon-Ra St. Brown in my top 12. Also shame on me, because all he did in the last five or six games of last season was catch the ball like 1,000 times and for 1,000 yards. It was ridiculous. But, you know, some of the more interesting things from that top 12 is two teams supporting two wide receiver ones. And Devontae Smith was not thought of as he was more in like the wide receiver two range. Maybe he was like a mid-range wide receiver two or back-end wide receiver two, and ends up having an incredible year. And that goes to the conversation of, we weren't sure if Jalen Hurts was even going to be able to support one wide receiver one, and then he supports two. I know that I personally was somebody that was down on A.J. Brown after the trade to Philly, and all he did was produce. So it doesn't happen very often that you have two teams, one team support two wide receiver ones, but to have two of them, I mean, that's pretty impressive. And for Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle to be in that conversation, especially from what we saw, Tua missed a bunch of time and they still were able to get into those slots. That's also pretty impressive.
I will freely admit the misses for me at wide receiver this year. I missed hard on Michael Pittman Jr. I still think he is very talented, but again, at the same time, the entire Colts offense was awful this season. So not a shocker by the end of 2022 that he was not a top 12 wide receiver. I missed on Cortland Sutton. Boy, I had Allen Robinson as a top 10 wide receiver this year. That did not go so great. I had Deebo Samuel in there as well. I did have AJ Brown in my top 12. And Christian Kirk was my sleeper. Jerry Jeudy was your sleeper. I think it's funny. You had Deontay Johnson as your 12th overall pick, your 12th overall wide receiver.
Boy, did I ever.
Like, here's the thing. That's not a bad pick. It's funny because despite where he finished this season, Deontay Johnson, I believe he set a record for the most catches in an NFL season without catching a touchdown. The guy had zero touchdowns this year through the air, and he had something like, 86 or 87 catches without a TD. And he, towards the end of the year, I think Kenny Pickett did pick it up a little bit, and he looked Deontay Johnson's way a fair bit, but still no TDs. I mean, there were some plays where Deontay Johnson would like catch the ball with like a toenail out of the end of the end zone and they'd call it back, or holding or some kind of penalty would prevent him from scoring a touchdown. But that he did that and did not finish in the, I don't even think he finished in the top 20 or top 25. I don't think, but
he was way down there. Wide receiver 37.
And I mean, look, even two touchdowns might've vaulted him into the top 25, let's say. Right. And he didn't catch any. So I expect there to be some quote unquote positive regression next year. You know, it's funny too. You look at some of these names on this list. I think my favorite name in the top 12 is Mike Evans, who finished as the 11th overall wide receiver. He finished the season like in championship weekend. And again, I owe a championship directly to Mike Evans, who was stapled to the bench all season long and was only started. And I suspect a lot of people are the same way. It was only started in week 17 out of pure desperation. He scored like 40 points in the very last week of the season, which by itself vaulted him. If you just take 40 points out of Mike Evans' end of season total, I don't even think he'd finish in the top 25. So he vaulted from like outside the top 25 to a top 12 wide receiver on the basis of the very last week of the fantasy season. If that does not encapsulate the idea that fantasy football is largely luck-based, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, I feel good because I had him as wide receiver 7, so I didn't miss what could have been an absolute disaster, like, you know, my Keenan Allen pick. Although Keenan Allen was hurt, so I don't feel as bad about that one. You're right. The Deontay Johnson thing, just to backtrack a little bit on it. So I'm looking at it right now on Fantasy Pros. If Deontay Johnson had 2 touchdowns, so 6 points each, Deontay Johnson would have went from wide receiver 37 to wide receiver 28. He would have passed Gabe Davis. So if you, in a normal year, Deontay Johnson is like, even if we give him 5 touchdowns, that's 30 points, right? If Deontay Johnson gets a regular season 30 points, that puts him at 160. We're talking about Deontay Johnson as wide receiver 22.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So a totally different conversation. That offense wasn't great. But yeah, the Mike Evans thing was super interesting just because he literally did nothing for like 8 weeks. Like, he had some games where, you know, he had maybe 70 yards and you were happy with that, but the touchdowns certainly weren't like they were last year. And there was a serious regression. I mean, there was going to be a little bit of a regression from Mike Williams, but I don't think anybody saw it being this bad. And then, like you said, he absolutely blows up in the last possible moment and ends up putting in a top 12 finish. Like, I agree with you. For anybody, like, there is a certain amount of effort that needs to be put into making your fantasy team good, and there's a certain amount of research that we do to try and give you that information. But when a guy puts up a 50 burger, you can't predict that.
No, you can't.
If anybody thinks that you can, I've got some swamp land for you in Florida that I'd like to sell.
One of my favorite things, if Mike Evans had not finished as a top 12 wide receiver, the 12th wide receiver, who obviously in this case finished 13th, would have been Tyler Lockett, who had 181 points. Now, here's the thing. Mike Evans had 186 points. T. Higgins, number 12, had 182 points. Lockett, 181. Brandon Ayuk, 180.9. Chase, 180.3. DK Metcalf, 176.3. Terry McLaurin, 175.6, which takes us all the way down to 17. So even like one touchdown for any of those guys or a handful of catches would have changed the 12 to 17 rankings of this year pretty dramatically, right? I don't think, like, if someone finishes 12 over 13, I don't think that's going to dramatically change your opinion of them going into 2023. I do think, though, and again, this goes back to a conversation we had at the beginning of the show about the Seattle Seahawks. Despite the loss, the play of Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf this season, or maybe the results or the statistic results for fantasy purposes that we got out of Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf this season was directly tied to Geno Smith. I believe we saw the report yesterday that Geno Smith is in one way or another going to be back as a Seattle Seahawks QB in 2023. So if that's the case, like, you still feel pretty good about drafting Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf in the, I don't know, like maybe round 3, round 4, round 5, thereabouts?
I'm more inclined to take DK just because I do worry about a little bit of a slide from Tyler Lockett just because of age, right? I think he's over 30 or he's around 30 or whatever, whereas DK Metcalf has some time on his side. And that's where to me, I think that I lean more. Listen, we always thought of Tyler Lockett as that their boom or bust wide receiver, kind of a la Deshaun Jackson a little bit. But with Geno Smith as the quarterback, and I know that Tyler Lockett's had really good seasons with Russell Wilson, but with Geno Smith as the quarterback, they really honed on Tyler Lockett in short yardage or shorter yardage, whereas before he was the guy that was stretching the field a lot. And I think that role is why he's still going to have value next season. But I still think that, you know, and Tyler Lockett went like at 6 or 7 straight games with a touchdown. Like, he was incredible. I just don't see that I don't think we see the same kind of touchdowns. Like, there's the negative touchdown regression next year, I believe. Whereas I think that DK ends up taking a bit of a step forward. That's kind of where I'm going with it. The Geno Smith thing is interesting because, in my opinion, I think he's going to get a 3-year deal with like a year and a half of guaranteed money.
Yeah.
Because then they can kind of get rid of him after next season, if it doesn't go well. I fully believe that they're going to take a quarterback in the first round and then have them sit behind Geno Smith. Because Geno Smith, if I'm not mistaken, He will have to have signed, like, he'll be a free agent and he'll sign a contract before the draft. So at that point, it's not really going to matter what Geno Smith thinks about them drafting a quarterback, because at that point it'll be too late. So I think that Geno Smith has been great for those two guys. And I do think that it's going to get better for DK Metcalf, just because he's the guy who profiles as the alpha. And I think that we're going to see that next year again.
I'll be so curious to see, because the Seahawks have the fifth overall pick by way of Denver, of course, with the Russell Wilson trade. I'm so curious to see if they do take a QB. I think you're probably right in that they do, because if you have this high a pick now in a year where the top end of the QB draft class is much better than years we had seen previously, then boy, I think you probably have to, you know, you kind of owe it to yourself to take a QB. And again, that's not a knock against Geno. It's just like, for the long term, is Geno going to be your QB based on age? Probably not, despite the fact that he was very, very good. By the way, a waiver wire pickup of the year. I know, like, I remember last year, or I guess last year is now 2022, but in 2021, I feel like the waiver wire pickup of the year could have been like Hunter Renfro or something, right? He was very, very good. Maybe a late round draft pickup of the year might have been like Cooper Kupp in 2021. In 2022, I honestly think that guy probably is Geno Smith, based on everything relative to expectations. Again, if you're looking at late-end draft guys, I'm sure Kenneth Walker is in there, and I'm sure, you know, Tony Pollard is in there and so on. But someone you probably picked up for free off of waivers is, I go with Geno Smith personally, because he was absolutely electric this year. You know, before we get to our Super Bowl picks, I have one for you. My preseason pick was Bills over Packers. We know that's not going to happen, so I'll give you the pick I made over Donovan earlier this week. But before we get to that, real quick, I mentioned Cooper Kupp. He finished as the 20th wide receiver this year, which honestly is like pretty remarkable, considering that he got injured and did not play like a third or almost an entire half of the fantasy season at the very least. He had 163 points in PPR. Obviously, he's going to be back next season and will be healthy. But where do you draft Cooper Kupp based on what happens in Los Angeles? We know that Sean McVay is returning to Los Angeles as the head coach. Maybe Brandon Staley goes back there if he gets fired. Like, who knows, right? But I do genuinely wonder what you do with Cooper Kupp, because you know he's extremely super talented, but it depends so heavily, kind of like the Garrett Wilson question. It depends so heavily on what happens at QB, what happens, you know, with the rest of the coaching staff around Sean McVay. I do wonder how you treat a Cooper Kupp situation, given that he is probably one of the top wide receivers in the entire NFL.
I still think that, well, with the news that Sean McVay is coming back, and to me, if Sean McVay is coming back, that means that Matthew Stafford's coming back. And if Matthew Stafford's healthy, that means that Cooper Kupp's going to get 20 targets a game. So, and I say that only half facetiously, so he'll get like 12 targets a game. I just think that the volume is there, and the way that guys come off of these injuries now, they're superhuman. It's not like before, where, you know, an ACL tear was a life sentence for an NFL player. That's completely changed. So I still think that Cooper Kupp is probably going in the top five or six wide receivers next season if everything stays status quo. Sean McVay doesn't change his mind. Matthew Stafford comes back. I think that Cooper Kupp is absolutely worthy of that kind of draft capital, because how many guys can you count on that are going to get double digit targets every week? Like, there's not one player that is going to get that every week. As much as we love Justin Jefferson, as much as we love Davante Adams and AJ Brown and Tyreek Hill, all those guys, they don't get the same volume as Cooper Kupp does. Even though he's going to be a little bit older, he's coming off the injury, I still think that there's going to be a lot of value there when you get him at wide receiver five or six.
Yeah, I am so curious to see what the Rams offense looks like next year. Is Cam Akers the guy? Like, is what is Cooper Kupp going to look like? What is Matthew Stafford going to look like? What are the BJ talked about Tutu Atwell. What do the other non-Kupp wide receivers look like in Los Angeles? The Rams fascinate me, because there's so much wiggle room there. Like, there's so much unknown there, whereas for a lot of other teams, you do know a large majority of what's going to happen. I mean, it's not like Cooper Kupp is not going to play football next year, but it's so fascinating to see what might happen, what might change. Like from 2021, in the year Kupp was the best wide receiver in fantasy, the Rams win the Super Bowl. 2022, a miserable experience to what might happen in 2023. That's a real roller coaster if you're a Rams fan, and also if you're a fan of drafting any of these guys to your fantasy team. Okay, we have a couple minutes left here, Matt. So why don't we get to our Super Bowl picks? I told you I picked Bills over Packers in my preseason article for Sportsnet.ca with the rest of the writers for Sportsnet.ca. But obviously, you got to revise that. My bracket that I had put out there a couple of days ago had Bills over 49ers in the Super Bowl. So Bills over the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. 49ers over Eagles in the NFC Championship game. I mean, obviously, it's like pretty easy to say that when the 49ers looked like such a well-oiled machine yesterday. But that's where I'm going. I'm going with the two seeds facing off against each other in the big game. So Bills over 49ers. I gotta imagine you, as a member of Bills Mafia, probably have the Bills in the Super Bowl. Is that fair to say?
Well, I have my Zubas pants on already. So how about that?
Okay.
I got up this morning and I was like, shower and Zubas pants. So we are in full Bills Mafia mode. My daughter is already dressed in her Bills garb for today, getting ready.
Does she have Zubas pants?
She does not. But okay. If I could find Zubas pants for a child that small, I would pay the fee.
Yeah.
I would absolutely pay the fee. But there's so many storylines. Like, yes, I'm picking the Bills because at some point this has got to happen. For my sanity alone, it has to happen. But when I look at the NFC, it's actually very interesting. I think the AFC is obviously interesting, but I'm going to go with the Bills. The NFC, there's two storylines that I think would be great. One is Brian Daboll getting to the Super Bowl in his first year with the Giants and then losing to the Bills. That would be great. But the big storyline that I would love to see, and I don't think it's going to happen, but the Bucs somehow get to the Super Bowl. Tom Brady, the guy who has always had the Bills number for basically two decades, dominated the Bills. And the new gunslinger in town, Josh Allen, retires Tom Brady by beating him in the Super Bowl. They finally exorcise the Tom Brady demon. That's what I would love. But it's going to be Bills and Eagles. I'm going chalk here. I'm going Bills and Eagles. Like I wish that I could say that it's going to happen, but the Bucs have not won three games in a row all year. It's been an absolute, just a weird season. They're going to beat the Cowboys tomorrow night because Tom Brady just beats the Cowboys all the time. But I can't see them beat. Like, I could see them beating Minnesota if Minnesota gets by the Giants. I can't see them beating the Eagles. The Eagles are just too good. So I think I'm going to go Bills Eagles Super Bowl, and I'm gonna do it. The Buffalo Bills are gonna win their first Super Bowl ever, and I'm gonna cry like a little baby. I may even record it for everybody.
I will freely admit, when the Raptors won the NBA title, I cried. I did.
I was working and yeah. I cried.
That's a top three moment maybe in my entire life. Like, getting married is up there, but the Raptors winning the NBA championship, it was absolutely up there. So
it was a close first.
Yeah, exactly, right? It was ooh, just by a hair, it was very close. So yeah, I feel you. If the Bills win the Super Bowl, I have a feeling you will not be the only one. Not just like in general, but here at Sportsnet, I have a feeling you will definitely not be the only one. Before we wrap up here, I want to read this text from FaZe, who has been a loyal listener and texts in basically every week. He just said, good morning, FaZe from Peterborough. Just letting you know, I won my league, ended up with only two losses the whole year. Thank you so much for all your assistance this year. It definitely helped. Congratulations, FaZe, and congratulations to anyone who won their leagues, at least in small part, thanks to us. I'll just say this. FaZe had a very, very good team. He did a really good job drafting. Like, most of his year, that was like, do I start A.J. Brown, Stephon Diggs, or CeeDee Lamb? Like, he had a very, very talented team. But either way, congratulations to FaZe, and congratulations to everyone who won a fantasy football championship in 2022. That's Matt Marchese. I'm Show Ali. We'll be back next week for another two-hour edition of The Fantasy Show. The Fantasy Show will be 2 hours right up until, I believe, the championship round of the NFL playoffs It'll go to 1 hour after that, and then our final show will be the day morning of the Super Bowl. So get your questions in at 590, 590, name and location. We'll do tight ends next week to wrap up the look back at the position players for 2022. But for now, you've been listening to the Fantasy Show. Show Ali, Matt Marchese with you on the Sportsnet Radio Network.